part of our walk today is about relationships to land, how to steward the land, relationships to place. So I want to talk now as an environmental philosopher about this topic of place, relationships. So put the whole wolf thing out of your mind. We're not talking about why we value wolves, though I will mention wolves in this little section in a second. We're not doing ethics, you know, talking about why does something matter and how should we behave. We're going to talk about place. So a way into this conversation, I thought, would be to pick up the last thing we discussed, my first stop there, that animals have cultures. Now, cultures, you can't have by yourself, really. You know, it's like I don't have a culture that I carry around, but my wife and I are part of a culture, and we're part of a family, and we're part of a community. Cultures are things you do in groups. So, cultures demand relationships. So this sounds like a very simple point, right? But I think it's actually an important one. Is relationships are very much part of who we are. And these are relationships to other people. So we're all in a community this morning. I hadn't met any of you, hardly any of you, until this morning. But we're now in a little community together. So we're all in relationships with people. And we're also in relationships with the land. So, I mean, this is just an incredible spot, which I will remember for years after our little tiny little moment. So, relationships are part of who we are in our cultures. They're relationships to people, and they're relationships to the land. And obviously the word culture, I mean, think about it, is related to cultivate, the idea of a place tilled. So you can't even use the word culture without thinking about a relationship to the land. So, where am I going with this? What I want to do is talk about place through four words, and they all begin with S. So this is going to be really helpful when you're driving home today. You can say four S words. So what were they? I can remember a couple of them. We're going to get to these four words by quoting one of my favorite environmentalists. Does anybody ever hear about or meet David Brower? He ran the Sierra Club for years. And he was a character. I saw him speak a few times in Oregon. I was at grad school in Oregon. He would come up to this big annual event we would have in Oregon. And, you know, he would say things like, there's nothing in the middle of the road but yellow lines and dead armadillos. Because he was completely uncompromised. He never went on the road. But the Brow quote I want to bring into our discussion about place is what he said about the California condor. So, you know, the California condor has been restored at great expense. They're still just hanging on. I mean, the population's slowly expanding. But what Brower said about the condor is, the condor, he said, is 5% flesh and feathers and 95% place. I've never forgotten that. It's a staggering comment that here's this massive bird, but actually, when you think about what a condor is, it's 5% flesh, bone, feather, and 95% place. So that point that Brower was making is that you are what you are because of where you are. And so here's the first S word that I want you all to think about. Storied residence. We all have a storied residence. And we all have stories that make us who we are. Those stories involve a lot of people, a lot of history, family history, but they also involve places. You know, I already know from several of you where you came from. And now you're in Montana, and you may have been in the DC area, you may have been in California. I know a little bit of the story. I know a bit about your storied residence. So a storied residence is a part of place. It's part of why we are what we are, in part because of where we are. And this is true of people, and it's true of animals. So just a quick mention to that wolf. That wolf has a storied residence too. And in a way, the stories are in the genes as well. So I'm not totally letting those genes go. But storied residence is important for people, it's important for animals, and it's definitely a component of our relationships that we have to the land. And Gary Snyder, many of you will have heard of Gary Snyder, a beat poet, he said, find your place and dig in. Dig in. And when you dig in, you start making stories. Really, that, I mean, that's what you do. You dig in, you stay, you start doing things there. You start making stories. And so your storied resonance becomes bigger and richer, more involved, more complex, and it becomes more and more a component of who you are. So that's the first S word, storied resonance. I'm going to test you on this. Here's the second S word, solastalgia. Solastalgia. Anyone ever heard of that word?
S-O-L or S-A-L?
S-O-L.
Okay, solastalgia.
It has the, can you hear another word in
nostalgia.
There?
Nostalgia.
It has solace and it has nostalgia in it too, doesn't it? So solastalgia is a new word. It's defined as the homesickness you feel when you are still at home. Now, why do you feel homesickness when you're still at home? Because we're living in a time where the places we exist are starting to change and starting to get damaged. And we're starting to lose things, either through development, some of the things you were talking about earlier on, or through climate change. And so solastalgia is this sense of loss that we feel even in the places in which we reside within these stories. And so solastalgia is, you know, it's a sad word, but it is, it's very much part of our sense of place. You know, this is the place I grew up, this is the place I love, and this is what is happening to it. Or this is the place I moved to, and I expected some sort of life here. And yes, I have part of that, but I also, you know, I'm losing my view, or you know, losing the wildlife or something like that. So solastalgia, storied resonance, is a sort of rich and exciting element of place. Solastalgia is a slightly more negative, slightly more mournful sense of place, but I think it's also increasingly part of our everyday lives. It's two words. Storied resonance, solastalgia. Here's another one that is relevant to sense of place. Shifting baseline syndrome. Are you familiar with that term? Mm-hmm. It's actually more out of the ecology literature than out of the philosophy literature. But we use it in the philosophy, environmental philosophy literature. So shifting baseline syndrome is the idea that as time goes by, as decades go by, as generations go by, what is normal changes. So what your expectations are for a certain landscape changes. For me, this is always really evident when we go to Yellowstone, and particularly in the winter, this time of year, when you're going to that north entrance, you look around, and you've got the Roosevelt Arch. Are people familiar with that way of entering Yellowstone through Gardner? And you see bison, and you see elk, and you see sheep, you see antelope, or you see a coyote. And you can just look around, and you can see 600 or 800 animals just right there. And it makes me realize what places like Montana were like. And now only a handful of them are like that. Yellowstone, for various reasons, still is like that. And, but it gives me a taste of how the baseline has shifted. You know, when we're at home in Missoula, you know, we'll see a few deer. We might see elk if we're lucky. We might see a bear. But the baseline has shifted so far that we don't even notice. We should be feeling solastalgia, actually, but we don't. We don't notice. So we've got three sense of place words so far. Can I have a rundown of what those three words are?
Shifting baseline.
Well, we
storied resonance.
Storied resonance.
different baselines of this.
And
storied residence.
Okay, good. So we're getting there. We've got 3 out of 4. I want to tell, we've had a couple of discussions already about how to cross boundaries, how not to just talk to the choir. So how do I reconcile my sense of place with the sense of place of somebody else who might not share my values, might see things very differently to me on environmental issues? How do I begin a conversation that might be a difficult conversation? And I want to illustrate that with something that happened last summer when Lisa and I were in a conversation with somebody near Whitehall, Montana. We were talking about wolves, and we were having an environmental discussion, and I said, this is where the wolf comes back into the story. I said, so, you know, these wolves are coming back. They really are coming back, and grizzly bears are coming back. And we're going to have to start getting used to having more of these animals around. How do you feel about that? And somebody, the first person that stuck up their hand, said, I don't feel very good about it at all. I think it's a horrible idea. We need to keep these animals controlled. And I said, why do you think you need to keep these animals controlled? And she said, well, we were here first. And now they're coming back. And so here's the thing about this. From an ecological standpoint, she's wrong, right? I mean, obviously she wasn't here first. But from the standpoint of her sense of place and her storied residence, she's right. When she grew up, there were no wolves there. For she was probably 65 or so. She probably hasn't experienced wolves in her landscape until the last 5 years or the last 10 years. So rather than just, you know, me sort of saying, well, that's ecologically false, you need to learn some science and get over it. What do I do in order to reconcile her storied residence with my storied residence? You know, we're never going to perfectly reconcile our different senses of landscape and who we are and our senses of culture. We're never going to perfectly reconcile it. But, you know, we'd like to have some kind of overlap. So how do we reconcile that? Here's the fourth S word. And it's also to do with sense of place. And it's the idea of situated knowledge. Now, this is a word straight out of the philosophy book. So not a word we use in polite company very often. But situated knowledge. What does situated knowledge mean? It means that what you think and what you say is very much a product of where you are, what your relationships are, how you're grounded. And okay, sometimes what you think and what you say is going to be wrong, but oftentimes it's going to be at least partially right, if not mostly right. Things change based on your situation. To some extent, values change based on your situation. To some extent, and I got to be very careful here, facts change based on your situation. Now, I'm not a fake news person, okay? I'm not saying everybody can have their own facts. But I am saying there are subtle kinds of changes based on the fact that a lot of knowledge is situated. And I want to illustrate that with one example of my own. So I grew up in England, and my dad and his dad really liked to hunt. And so my grandpa gave me a shotgun, you know, when I was about 8 years old. You know, he wanted me to be a hunter. And as I grew up in England, I started to realize I didn't really like hunting. I didn't really like the hunting culture. Because in England, the hunting culture is all about private land ownership and money and privilege. That's it. If you are a hunter, you are embedded in that context somehow. That's what makes hunting possible in England, is privilege, land, money. I didn't like it, so I didn't have anything to do with it. 25 years later, I moved to Montana. we have all this public land. You have licenses that cost about $20, give or take a little bit. And this public land is accessible to everybody. And for me, that changed the equation on hunting. So what didn't seem right at all now actually seems very much part of my storied residence here. Part of my culture. And I got into this with a lot of friends and the relationships I have with those friends. But it seems part of what I am in this place. Now, did the facts change? I mean, if you're concerned about suffering or animal rights or something, there's no facts have changed there. But there's something about the situation has changed. Situated knowledge. You know, my situated knowledge changed when I was here compared to when I was in England. So that helps me to think about the lady who said, well, we were here before the wolves. When I think about situated knowledge, and I think about whatever stories people tell about where they are going to be contextual. They're going to emerge out of people and landscape, and they're going to emerge out of a sense of place. So, I want one more summary of my four words, then I'm going to make a concluding remark. First
situated
word.
Situated knowledge.
Storied residence.
Storied residence.
Solastalgia.
Solastalgia.
Shifting baseline.
Shifting baseline syndrome.
Yeah, that's all four.
And situated knowledge. Okay. All of these, I would say, are part of sense of place, part of relationship to land. Here's the last thing I want to say. If you accept these four as being important notions, if you accept these four as being somehow relevant to how we should relate to land, how we should relate to each other, what does that tell us ethically about how to be in the world? Well, here's what I think it tells us. I think it tells us we need to be very good listeners. I think it tells us we need to be very sensitive. I think it tells us we need to be very patient. We need to be very compassionate. We need to not be aggressive about our viewpoints. We need to learn how to build bridges. We need to be open to differences in the world. And that's not something that our culture is doing very well at the moment. So, I have one more bone that I might throw into the conversation here. All these ideas come from a certain segment of the philosophical community. And I wonder if you can guess which segment of the philosophical community they come from. So an emphasis on care, compassion, sensitivity, openness. Does anyone hazard a guess at which...
Are we going with care ethics?
...area of the philosophical community it comes from? So just, can you say simply, in a simpler term, where it comes from?
It's simpler than care ethics?
Yep. Ethics. Which demographic?
Oh. Females.
Ah, yeah. I see what you're saying.
So that's the last thought on this topic. all of these S words and all of these recommendations come out of recent work that mm-hmm. begins with women mm-hmm. philosophy thinkers.
Sorry. Appropriate and profound.
I was at a workshop this last week, and there was this big ecology guy, gruff. He has a really bad reputation for pissing people off. And I was a little intimidated by him. But as soon as he walked in the room, I knew I wasn't going to be intimidated because he had written on his t-shirt, "The future is female."
I'll bust your chops if you know what I
mean. In my work, I work with teams, particularly leaders and organizations, and bring them together. And one of the exercises exercises we use quite often to open up is having to do what we call a journey line, which is basically a biography of significant things in your life that shaped who you are and brought you in the room today. And it helps that understanding up front. Before you start trying to solve issues, it helps to understand who each other is.
Situate somebody.
Yeah.
It helps you adjust your filter as you're listening to that person. Because you're coming to, with your story, you're coming to that gathering.
Yeah.
And I think helps identify the values that are sort of leading our thoughts as well. Your discussion about the difference and how you felt storied residence-wise about hunting, it seems like some of the driving components when you said it was the private land and all of this, it wasn't as much the hunting that was issue, but what the hunting was supporting or representing or the underlying values of that that was problematic.
Yeah.
So being able to identify what those are, I think, are really helpful for bridging that gap between
folks.
Yeah,
and stories get you to those values, right? You know, start telling me a story. Start telling me why this matters. And as the stories get told, you start to say, oh, that's the value here, isn't it? That's the thing that's important to this person.
A lot of those are culturally carried as well. Because, you know, I could point you at someone who'd be, you know, a very caring person and help out their neighbors or whatever, and say, well, you know, why don't we have socialized medicine? Well, that's, you know, that's socialism. Why don't we have, you know, healthcare? But wait a minute, you know, you're willing to do this as a person, but why can't we do it as a community?
Yeah.
And those cultural things, you know, it's somehow embedded that we can't do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are very odd sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no sort of recipe here for solving the problem.
Right. No.
but there's a recipe for being more open to the problems and more sensitive to where the problems are and how they emerge and how they got here. And actually, to put another philosophy piece in here, so the feminist philosophers who've come on board and started saying all this stuff, the one criticism they often get is, well, you're no good at solving problems. You need a guy philosopher in there who's going to solve the problem. And, you know, because the guy philosophers are supposed to be more sort of absolute and, you know, stamp their authority on a discussion. And the feminists say, well, that's the point. This is not a place to stamp authority. It's a place to sit back, consider in more depth, discuss, be open. Everybody give a little bit of ground. They have a whole different approach to problem solving.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the important things you pointed out in terms of, I think, a critical ingredient is listening.
Yeah.
I think oftentimes we talk or people have conversations, but the emphasis on listening is lost, and what kind of conversation can happen if you're not truly listening to understand as opposed to listening to attack or to defend. It's listening to understand is, I think, step one.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
But we're emotional beings. And when somebody says something really
So before we leave, I want four S words, please.
Storied residence.
You only get one. Burrow nostalgia.
Shifting baseline syndrome.
Yes. And?
Storied residence, I think. Was that one just said? Oh, that was it. Oh.
Last one.
Situated knowledge.
Oh. Yeah, I like that one.
Okay, store those away.